हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनोऽभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
ओके पेज 31
Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur confirms, what is the result of knowing the qualities of elements? Verse 2 explains, from knowing the characteristics of elements arises knowledge of the Atma, separate from the body. Right? So it's, you're trying to understand or figure out what is the soul, right? But to understand the soul, then you have to understand what the soul is not. Right, because otherwise, we think the soul is the body, is the environment. But then when we understand that it's not, it's separate. So that's what the qualities of the elements do. Because then you can see is that they're different from the soul. Lord Kapila begins his teachings with the first principle, the Supreme Purusha, and his transcendental qualities. Quote, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Soul. He has no beginning. He is transcendental to the material modes of nature and beyond the existence of this material world. He is perceivable everywhere because he is self-effulgent. And by his self-effulgent luster, the entire creation is maintained. As his pastime, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, the greatest of the great, accepted the subtle material energy, which is invested with three material modes of nature, and which is related with Vishnu. Verses 3 and 4. Text 4 describes that the Lord accepts the creation of the material world by his own will as his pastime, his self-willed activity to lift the conditioned souls back to the spiritual world. The Mayavadis impersonalists misinterpret this text to mean that he, as his pastime, for his pleasure, willingly assumes the position of Jiva and enters the material world to suffer in one body after another, as if that's happiness. If it was real happiness, why are the Mayavadis trying to get liberated? Right? You know, and it's not that liberation is boring, so you need a variety by coming into the material world so you can appreciate being liberated. You understand? So the difficulty comes is because they're not using their intelligence. They're just thinking about the aspect of liberation. They cannot see beyond their definitions. Because if their definitions are true, if they really are fixed in them, why would Brahman come as Jiva? Because if Brahman is immutable, unchangeable, how does Brahman come as Jiva? Right? And where did the material energy come from? Right? If it comes from Jiva, then why would the Jiva need to get free from the material energy? Because Jiva's created the material energy. Right? So the difficulty comes is their philosophy is not consistent. All they do is they just want to have found, they can't become God by being the enjoyer, so they want to be God by being the controller.
Yes.
Right? That's all. So it's not a well thought out program. Popular. So just as much as your standard mundane consciousness is popular, so this aspect of mundane consciousness is also popular. It's just a little more intellectual and for those who are really frustrated. Right? If you're a little less frustrated, then you're going to go for the enjoyment option. You know? But if you're convinced somehow or another you can't enjoy, then you may take up this as an option.
Sometimes
that make sense? Otherwise, one wouldn't. One wouldn't do. And then you'll do it for a while, and then you'll get bored, and then after getting bored, then again you'll go back into it. Does that make sense? Because here, just like this, give an example. Why? Because we say that the impersonalism of the voidness is actually the cause for sense gratification. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, let us say just as... to give the example, okay, we're interested in material energy, right? Which is very... everything. You know, everything is there. So then, someone who's interested in enjoying the material energy, right, following the Vedic principles, then has to focus that energy on something. Does that make sense? You know, you have your house, right, or your wife, or your money, or your occupation, right? Now you do have those who are very, you know, on one aspect, well esteemed in material society, you know, who can move with any ladies.
Yes.
You understand? But if you take some of, you know, you take this aspect of Casanova, okay? But so is women personal or impersonal to him? It's impersonal because it's just women. He enjoys women. You know what I'm saying? But the Grihastha is about woman, one person, not the generic thing. You understand? So that's why the point of duty is that brings it down to the personal platform. It means you can't take it. You can also interpret it impersonally, but it brings it closer. So when you work on the impersonal, that anything is enjoyable, then that's the point. It's impersonalism because it gets rid of the personal aspect. Then what are your obligations? So it makes it easier actually to become the enjoyer of the material energy. Well, the personal, then it's about you do things or not do because people are involved. Does that make sense? So if that's done in connection with the spiritual, then that restriction then is uplifting. If it's not done in the spiritual, then that will be binding. So you could say that the impersonal will be between the sense gratification and the enlightened. You understand? But the difficulty is if it's used for the proper purpose, it is elevating. But if it remains as impersonal, then there is nothing for the soul who is a person. So again, they'll fall back into the material nature to try to enjoy. It's just like if enjoyment doesn't work, then you take up control. When control doesn't work, then you take up enjoyment, because there's only two options. Right? Is that make sense? That doesn't make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you say that as a group in the far east, right? Do they like their sense gratification?
Yeah.
They like very much.
Yes.
They're very committed.
Yeah.
Okay. And their philosophy is personal or impersonal?
Impersonal.
Okay. See, the two go together.
Yeah.
And if there's no philosophy?
There's no sense gratification.
That's the way.
That's a little bit, but the point is there's this concept that is personal and all these different things. Well, the other, it's a little bit less. When you get down to the muda, then there's no philosophy, there's no sense gratification.
Yeah. It seems to be quite satisfied with that situation.
Yeah. And then when they're not satisfied, then you'll see them going to, you know, Wu Dan. No?
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is that one or the other, they can move back and forth. Yes.
Kalpa says in the first canto that lack of knowledge of original sex life within Krishna, that's what leads to simple life.
Here.
Here.
Yes, because the living entity is personal. And so the point is that then it has to be directed in the proper way. If it's not, then you're going to end up with what's here. Because here, sense gratification isn't technically personal. Right? Like that. It may have that more pious element that is regulated and those kind of things. But it still ultimately doesn't get to the actual personal platform. Because the person is the soul, not the body.
Not possible.
Yeah, so technically it's not possible in the material world to actually really be fully personal. So you can only do so by connecting it to Krishna. So then as devotees, then you can relate to each other and then have. And then you're playing the parts of these relationships. Right? Because it's always a matter of playing parts. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
So yeah. Buddhists and Mayavadis, they have no knowledge of spiritual variety.
Right.
So therefore they're looking for so much variety
here. Yeah. Because that's the thing, is that they'll try for no variety because the variety has bothered them, so they'll try for no variety, but when they can't function in no variety anymore, then they have to take up variety again. And they don't know spiritual variety, so they only know material, so they come back. Yeah. So that would be the difference. So our philosophy is going back to Godhead, and their philosophy is, I'll be back. Yeah, so they stay.
That's just from a movie from when I was a teenager. I'll be back.
Hmm?
I'll be back is from a movie when I was a teenager, so I just got
Arnold
Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, yeah, no. That's, I've heard every movie he's in, he said, I'll be back. Okay. Text 4 describes that the Lord accepts the creation. Okay. Okay, Srila Prabhupada dismisses this proposal. The Mayavadi philosopher's presentation is that the living entity enjoys his pastimes by accepting the body of a hog. This theory is not acceptable because the word pastime implies voluntary acceptance for enjoyment. Therefore, this interpretation is most misleading. When there is enforced acceptance for suffering, it is not a pastime. The Lord's pastimes and the conditioned living entities' acceptance of karmic reaction are not on the same level. Because the Lord's pastimes are to deliver the living entities from the material world. But the living entities' pastimes are just for binding them in the material world. So you can't compare them, because the Lord is not bound. You know, when it says he accepts the pastime, it means that. But the living entity doesn't. And if the Mayavadi believes this, then what's the point of getting out of here? If it's a great pastime, then what's the point? You know, the pigs are having a great time. And, you know?
They think they come back to see
the... Oh, maybe that's it. Is the Mayavadi, his illusion was broken, you know, about the pigs when he went to China. Then he figured out they don't enjoy so much over there. You know, in France they get to eat truffles and stuff like that. Yes? No?
Different culture.
Huh? Different culture. Different culture, yes. Different value when it comes to the pig, right? To explain the transcendental position of the Lord, Srila Prabhupada gives an analogy. The energy emanated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests in two ways, as an emanation from the Supreme Lord and as a covering of the Lord's face. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that because the whole world is illusion by the three modes of material nature, the common conditioned soul, being covered by such energy, cannot see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The example of a cloud is very nicely given. All of a sudden, there may appear a big cloud in the sky. This cloud is perceived in two ways. To the sun, the cloud is a creation of its energy, but to the ordinary common man in the conditioned state, it is a covering to the eyes. Because of the cloud, the sun cannot be seen. It's not that the sun is actually covered by the cloud. Only the vision of the ordinary being is covered. Similarly, although Maya cannot cover the Supreme Lord who is beyond Maya, the material energy covers the ordinary living entities. These conditioned souls who are covered are individual living entities, and he from whose energy Maya is created is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, so it's his energies and it is the covering element. So there is the energy, it's just the Lord's inferior energy. Right, so the jivas can function in that and serve the Lord. But then you have the aspect where the living entities are covered by that same energy. If they don't want to serve the Lord, they're covered. If they want to serve the Lord, then they get out. Right? So that's the thing, is it has a double function. It's meant for elevating the living entities back to Godhead, but it also keeps in prison the ones that aren't interested. Right? Because you don't want a bunch of non-Krishna conscious living entities running around in the spiritual world. That would really be an annoyance. You know what I'm saying? You know, everyone's in the kitchen, they're cooking for Krishna, like that, and it's all about, wow, you know, okay, cook this, we can cook that, and then suddenly somebody walks in and goes, hey, wow, what's in the pot? That looks good. You know, when's lunch? You know, it's like, you know, it's like, kind of like everyone, where'd this guy come from? Yeah, so it just, it won't work. Divided into varieties by our threefold modes, material nature creates the forms of the living entities. And the living entities, seeing this, are illusioned by the knowledge covering feature of the illusory energy. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, to reclaim the fallen jivas and to bring them back to his abode, accepts the pastime of indirectly interacting with the subtle material energy, within which are the three unmanifest modes. After the modes have manifest during the process of creation, this subtle energy will provide the activities and fields of activity for the conditioned soul. So he's created in the primary creation, then the mahat. So from that you're getting the universal form. So that's the indirect way he's dealing, because it's his potencies and his energies and his direction why everything functions the way it does. Right? Once that's established, then Maya carries it out by the modes of nature. So that the living entity, according to their interest, then they are placed within that universal form. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's the thing. Everything here is everything set how it works. But they'll put it together for you, you know, if, you know, by order. You know, it's custom, you know, like that, and personally delivered, right? You know, you don't have to walk around looking for that truck. You just have to step off the curb, and the truck finds you. You know, it's very well managed. The Bhagavad Gita 13:6-7 states. The five great elements, false ego, intelligence, the unmanifested, the 10 senses, and the mind, the five sense objects, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms and convictions, all these are considered in summary to be the field of activities and its interactions. Right? Because you have the 24 elements, but then you have the interactions. Right? So the field has to have all these different aspects to it. So you have the 24 elements. But then you have all these others, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, mm-hmm. How you say. So like that, then everything, the life symptoms, convictions, so all that will then make everything work. That's why then Brahma creates all these other aspects.
Yes.
Right? And that's how we get bound. So then if we get rid of that, so that all would be based on false ego. Right, you remove the false ego, then your entanglement in all this is stuff. Because the point is the five great elements don't have a problem.
Yes.
Right, intelligence, the unmanifest, the 10 senses, the mind, the sense objects, desire. It means these. How you say? Those aren't your problems. Life symptoms, convictions. They're connected to the Lord. They work very nicely. But desire and hatred, happiness, distress. That comes because we apply it. In the expanded principle of false ego, that I think I can enjoy the material world. Right? There's false ego, then there'll come up the fault. I mean, there's ignorance, then there'll be ego attachment, then there'll be this hatred, because you think I can be the fifth one happy. So all that will come up from. So the point is those ones are what makes it function. So those five aspects of ignorance and all the derivatives, that's what makes the material work. Because you're working because of desire or hatred, happiness or distress. Right? You're happy, you're working for happiness. You know, you're happy, you're working because of that happiness. You're distressed, you're working to get rid of it. Or you're distressed, so you're just bothering everybody else because, you know, there's nothing else to do. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's why people do things. You can say, no, I work to get money, or, you know, but no, because it'll make them happy. Either directly they like the work, it makes them happy, or the results of the work will make them happy. So everything's functioning because of these. So you have the field of activities and its interaction. So that's why one can't understand the material energy through science, because desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the mind, these things are not part of the definitions. Even the senses, they don't really, even though you, they will only accept it if they can get understand it through the senses, but they don't actually appreciate the senses in the process. That's the fun part, right?
It's impersonal.
It's impersonal, yes. So again, then from scientists comes up sense gratification.
Yes.
You know, so either from the either from the impersonalism of sense gratification, the impersonalism of liberation. So that's the whole thing. The impersonal just gives rise to sense gratification, because if it's just Brahman, then what's the point? You can just, it's mechanical, you can just do what you want with it. But as soon as it gets personal, then there's a matter of, okay, I have obligations and everything. Does that make sense? Thus, souls desiring enjoyment independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead will have a field for their activities. Necessarily, that field will also provide the illusion that will cover the soul's eternal relationship with Krishna. Right? Because there's two things. They will have the field, which is the energy that comes from Krishna, and they will be covered by that field. Because those are the two aspects. Right? It means the expansion of the energy and the ability of him to be covered, so we can't see. So that same energy, if you're not interested in seeing him, you can't see him. That same energy being used in connection to the Lord, then that through that energy you will see the Lord. The Lord will reveal himself.
Mm-hmm. Means material nature has two sides of function.
Yes. One to take you back to Godhead, one to keep you here. It's just like a prison. What's, you could say a prison, what's its higher function? If we're looking at the more ideal and more social aspects, what would we say is the purpose of a prison? Yes. Right. People will become reformed. Now, for the common person who gets, you know, now they'll think it's about the retribution, that they're going to be punished. So it's because they're kept there. But no, because they are punishable, they're kept there until they reform. Right? So after the guy served his, you know, four lifetimes and all that, then he can definitely get out and move in society as a free man. Right? No? Yeah. I mean, being dead is a minor point in this equation, but hey. You understand? So it has these two aspects. So the material energy is for reformation. So if you take that properly, like you deal properly, follow the rules and regulations of the prison, then you get reformed. If you don't follow them, then the prison just, you know, serves as a function to keep you there. Does that make sense? So it has both function at once. So they're not opposed to each other. Right?
It depends on the jiva.
Yes.
Can if you want to go back to the dead, he can. Maya is helping him.
Yes. Yes. And if he doesn't, then she's also helping.
Yes.
The difference is one she's pleasant, and the other she puts on her hobnailed bobber boots.
Right. So can we say one aspect is Maya, another aspect is Yoga Maya?
It's just, is Krishna involved or not? That's the only difference. You're dealing with the Lord's energy, you're dealing with Maya. Now, it's in connection with Krishna, Yoga Maya. Not in connection with Krishna, Mahamaya. That's how it functions. Does that make sense? Kamsa comes to Vrindavan, he's dealing with Mahamaya. But all the other gopis that are sitting around and laughing that Purnamasi's turned them into a gopi and has now told them to, you know, start washing plates and stuff like that, they're functioning under Yogamaya and they're having a great time. But he's being controlled by Mahamaya. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's the same thing. It's the same person.
And same energy.
Same?
Same energy.
Same energy. It's the Swarup Shakti. It's just which manifestation is being presented. Now the Swarup Shakti has superior and inferior and marginal aspects. So as a general rule, Mahamaya is manifest in the inferior and the Yogamaya in the superior. But the jiva who turns towards Krishna, who takes up saintly behavior, then they're functioning under Yogamaya, even though they're in the realm of the external energy. Right? Does that make sense? That's why it's Krishna consciousness. Krishna's about, you change the consciousness, you change where you are. Does that make sense? You know, so it's not that you're standing in Beijing and you change your consciousness and then you're in Paris. Not like that, you know. No, it's about you're in the spiritual world or you're in Beijing. Right? Just like on the other side, they're either in Paris or they're in the spiritual world. Probably a little less of a difference, but...
Can we say that it's us who attracted the Yogamaya or attract Mahamaya?
No, they're already existing. We don't create them. See, again, this goes back to, I think, 2 days ago we had the same discussion. That we think that we're the one that's creating it.
Well, I mean, attract, I didn't say create.
No, but attract, no, they're not attracted by us. Is the police warden attracted by the prisoners? No, they just put their attention and reciprocate according to their behavior. You behave in a proper way, you get certain kind of dealings. You don't behave in a nice way, you end up in solitary. You know what I'm saying? So that's it. You know what I'm saying? So the guy can go out into the yard and play basketball, but you know he can't get puffed up because he's still in prison. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so many things to think about, huh? Necessarily, that field will also provide the illusion that will cover the soul's eternal relationship with Krishna. Right? So he has to have a field, and that field will necessarily cover him. So that's the thing, is it has both. Okay. Once the creation is actuated out of kindness, the Lord descends to the material realm and performs pastimes to enlighten the conditioned souls and remind them about their relationship with Him. You know, it's just like you may have the priest come to the prison and try to help people. Like that. So that's the preaching mission. Srila Prabhupada further explains the need for the Lord's creation pastime in his purport to text 5. Go to 420, right? Okay. There's a hint in the previous verse in the word lilaya, which means for the pastime of the Lord. End quote. The Lord wants to rectify the enjoying temperament of the conditioned souls. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that no one is the enjoyer but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? Because the point is he's the only enjoyer. And it's perfect. And then we want to be the enjoyer, but that's foolish because the enjoyed actually enjoys more than the enjoyer. Right? But the point is when you have two enjoyers, then how do you enjoy? It must be the two, enjoyer and enjoyed. Even if you have two friends that are equal, one will be taking the active role, then the other one will be taking the active role. Right? There's something is going on like that. You always have to have this principle. This material energy is created, therefore, for anyone who pretends to enjoy. Right? Because you're not actually the enjoyer. It can't be done. Only Purusha can do that. Right? So it's for those who pretend to enjoy. Like that. Because the point is what is enjoyment? How do you define enjoyment? Right? Because the soul technically does not become happy. The soul projects. Since the soul is not the body, and the body is coming in contact with the sense objects, right? That's being perceived by the mind. So technically you would say the body is enjoying. Because if the sense meeting the sense object is causing enjoyment, that means the body would be enjoying. But the body is dead matter, it really doesn't care.
Yes.
Does that make sense? You know, you put all your things in the blender, blend up some nice drink and all that. Whether you drink it or pour it over your head, the body actually doesn't care. You know what I'm saying? We care. Does that make sense? Is that? So we project that there's happiness. So that's why it's so-called or pretends to enjoy. Because you can't actually enjoy. Because the body is the one that's interacting, and we're not the body. And the body is dead matter. So it's like it's a lose-lose here, you know? Body doesn't care, and we can't actually enjoy. So we're only projecting that if this happens, then I'll be happy. But if that happened and it made everybody happy, why isn't everyone just sticking to that? Because it doesn't make you happy, so you go on to the next thing.
Then where does the happiness come from?
Where does the happiness
come from? The sense of happiness come from?
The sense of happiness is projected. The soul by nature is happiness, ananda. And that will be generated from activity, the results of activity. But since we're generating that through dead matter, right? Dead matter on dead matter, result is dead matter, so everything is just dead. Right? And so then the point is there's technically nothing there for the living entity to enjoy. Does that make sense? You know, it's let's say a video game or something. You know, if this happens in the video game, then you'll be happy. But what technically is your connection with the video game? You're only yourself involving yourself, but actually everything's being done through the material elements, the body, the senses, the sense objects. So the soul doesn't actually have connection to these. So you're only projecting that I'll be happy. Does that make sense? So there is no actual enjoyment, but the soul is looking for enjoyment because the soul by nature is ananda. So only in connection with the supreme enjoyer, because Krishna, he is an enjoyer. If he's enjoying and we're connected to him, why won't we be happy? Does that make sense? So that's the point. We connect to him, then we actually do become happy. Right? You run unlimited happiness through unlimited. That's standard. You run unlimited happiness through 1/10,000, the tip of the hair. That's a lot. Does that make sense?
Like Siddhi said that when during the creation, when they Vidakdupa, he
wants. You said creation, not Croatian.
Creation.
Okay.
Vidakdupa.
During the Croatian.
He said he wants to eat. Then the
Croatian wants the creation. But, yeah, okay. Create Croatians also.
So when Vidakdupa he wants to eat, then the.
He wants to eat. Yes.
Yeah. Then the sense of. Since it's manifest,
right.
Eating manifest.
So, but that's his free will. He manifests self. We don't manifest self. We just, according to our mentality, then they're imposed upon us.
So, by eating the Virat Rupa feel happy. I mean, our eating. Right?
No. But if we bring our eating in line with the Virat Rupa, then we feel happy. You have to understand it's you have to know when to take it, which direction. So you always have to remember, your equation will always never quite work out because you're putting the jiva in the center rather than Krishna in the center. It's about self-realization, but self-realization means understanding our relationship with Krishna. You understand? So whenever you start with the jiva and go out from there, you'll get many things, but you can never properly conclude it. Right? So that's why it comes out, it doesn't sound right. If Krishna is the center, then the thing is, why does the Virat Rupa have those desires here? He's already happily being fed by Mother Jashoda. Why does he need to come here in the Mahatattva then have to generate things? Mother Jashoda is already cooking. He doesn't have to worry about it. Right? Because the living entity wants to be separate. So the Lord, out of his desire to bring the living entities back to Godhead, therefore he has the material creation where he makes all this here. But it's still by his desire. So, that makes
sense. So he has no any happiness from this creation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let us say this. Okay. We have this nice big bowl, steaming hot, fresh fried rice. Okay? All the different things in it, really good. Okay? And it's a big bowl, right? You have you there, you have your chopsticks, you know, you're sitting down, okay? No one else is asking if they can have any, you know? It's good, okay? Right?
Yeah.
Now let's say I take out of that bowl one grain of rice. And of that one grain of rice, I get out a razor blade and cut off the smallest possible little tip of that grain of rice. Okay? And then I offer that to you. How much happiness are you going to get? Little. Only little. Wow. Okay, not bad. So, how many more of those little slivers would I have to get before it's okay? You know, you get like a quarter of a grain or something. Or, wow, we got half a grain today. You know, it's really happening today. You understand? Okay, let us adjust the context slightly. And that amount that I mentioned about getting the razor blade, and cut, you know, so it's maybe like a thousandth of a grain of rice. That's all you're going to get every day to eat. You can have one of those every day. Now, how much happiness? How much satisfaction is there?
You have to suffer.
Okay. You understand? Is the point is so the internal potency then is manifesting its full potency in the spiritual world to run the, and that's one pastime is doing going, right? Now for the whole material world. One quarter of the cosmic manifestation, unlimited universes, and in each universe, unlimited living entities. To run all that, it takes one billionth of a billionth portion of her energy. So how much enjoyment is Krishna going to get out of that? Right? And what we were offering you was probably millions of times greater bit of rice than what Krishna would get out of it. So in other words, there's nothing of enjoyment here at all for him. So the only thing of enjoyment here is the interaction with the devotees. That's the only reason he comes, to interact with the devotees. And by performing the wonderful pastimes and interacting with the devotees, they have fun, and it becomes attractive to those living entities that haven't taken up or are just beginning to take up. So that means it's still the devotional aspect. Does that make sense? So that's all he gets from it. It's not that there's something else to gain. Does that make sense?
But the Lord is all blissful, so whatever he does,
he's blissful within himself. But the point is that's Atmarama. Now he expands that happiness by expanding his energies to interact. So how do you interact with dead matter? Here. Your new friend. Yeah, how you been today? You know, so, you know, been sitting in the garden all day, huh? Yeah, so, how are the other rocks treating you there? So, you know, it's like, how far is that going to get you? I mean, I know it's a popular thing on the internet to have a rock as a pet. You know, you might have to worry about it dying because you didn't feed it or something. But. Yeah. Okay. An example may be cited here that there is no necessity for a government's creation of a separate police department. But because it is a fact that some of the citizens will not accept the state laws, a department to deal with criminals is necessary. Right? Means technically, when you design a society, you don't technically need a police force, because if everybody does what they're supposed to, then what's the need of that? It's because people don't do what they're supposed to, that's why you need a police force. There is no necessity, but at the same time there is a necessity. Similarly, there is no necessity to create this material world for the suffering of the conditioned souls, but at the same time there are certain living entities known as Nityabada, or eternally conditioned. We say that they have been conditioned from time immemorial because no one can trace out when the living entity, the part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, became rebellious against the supremacy of the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So Prabhupada says Nityabada, and then eternally conditioned, and then clarifies it. Right? That the living entity has been it's since time immemorial. Right? Because the point is, anadi means that if you become conditioned with outside of the material world, right? You're conditioned within the state of liberation. Yes. It's not under the control of the modes of nature. Yes. So therefore, there is no material time to designate it. Yes. Right? And since you're working in eternal time, there's no time here you can say when it happened. Mm-hmm. So you can't define. So therefore, Nityabada. Just in the same way as that person who therefore turned from the tathasta position to the positive and took up prema, then they're nitya siddha. Right? Because, does that make sense? Yeah. Without tracing out the beginning of the existence of these two classes, the obedient and the atheist or agnostics, we can take it for granted, so even the agnostics, even though they're not as bad as the atheists, they're still not in a good situation. Right? Because they're not really accepting the supremacy of the Lord. They're not necessarily militating against it, but they're not accepting. Right? You know, just like you may have a thief who just goes around stealing things and that, but it's not that he's against the policeman. you know, he may deal properly and everything like that. While you have the other one, as soon as he sees police, then he, you know, may try to do something. You understand? So we can take it for granted that some of the living entities revolted against the laws of the Lord. Such entities are called conditioned souls, for they are conditioned by the three modes of material nature. Right? So revolted against means, to have a revolt means there has to have been no revolt. And then you revolt, right? So it goes together.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. So that means there's a natural position of the living entity where he's not revolting. Right? Does that make sense? And so now in the position he's in now, then that's the yes. No? Because of its forgetfulness, the transcendental living entity accepts the influence of material energy as its field of activities instead of the spiritual. Right? And thus, actuated, he wrongly applies the activities to himself. Right? So the field is there, then the field has to be activated. Right? Because you have the concepts, because the universe of form is the field. But then you have to apply that. So when that's actuated, that's then when you get bound. Because otherwise, when it's not actuated, even though you may have that Purusha Bhav, you're still in the Vasudeva Sattva. Because what's the get entangled in? The universal form, you don't get entangled in. You know what I'm saying? How do you deal? You just have unlimited cars. So until you choose a car, that's when you get entangled.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? If it's just cars, you're just sitting there. As soon as there's car, you know, do you have a license? You know, did you pay your taxes? You know, you got to change the tire, change the oil. You know, somebody's in the back seat talking all the time. You know, all these things start happening. Understand? So until it's actuated, so that's the thing, the living entity wants. So that's the second aspect. So the primary aspect of Hridaya Dalbalya is the weakness of heart that you want to be the controller enjoyer. But you don't really get the effect until the secondary, where I want to enjoy it in this way or that way. Right? So therefore you have to have the material body and the field of activities. Otherwise, then we're just in the, you know, the grand scheme, the the field of the Mahat, but it's nothing for the soul to deal with. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Because of its forgetfulness, the transcendental living entity accepts the influence of material energy as its field of activities. And thus, actuated, he wrongly applies the activities to himself. Because he thinks that these activities of the material energy are connected with him when they're actually not. So that's the point. The devotee then understands this, performs his duties, because then they're following Krishna's laws, and they're in Krishna's system. But he does it to please Krishna. So it's not that Krishna conscious person doesn't do anything. He still follows everything, but now he's doing it to serve Krishna. So, therefore, the activities aren't applied to himself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So he's not actually actuating the material energy.
Yes.
You understand?
Yes.
He's actuating devotional service. He just happens to be applying it in the inferior energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
This would be very elevated.
Not good?
Very good. But how is it difficult for us? Because we sometimes may understand that.
That's the point, is that if we understand what's the ideal, then we sometimes apply it. Is that yeah, so then, and we expand from there. You know?
Because theoretically we understand. When it comes to action.
No, but unless you theoretically understand, you can't apply. Because application is based on some knowledge.
Yes.
So if you have the knowledge that I am the supreme controller and enjoyer, so therefore you act in that way, you apply that. But when we start to find out that actually we're not the supreme controller and enjoyer, then it starts to have its effect on our application of we're the supreme controller and enjoyer.
Yes.
So we're not quite as confident as we used to be, you know. Is that enough? And then slowly, slowly it replaces, that's all. So it's not that, the point is because the soul is by nature the servant of Krishna and transcendental, you could, in a moment, actually make the switch. Mm-hmm. But since we've been doing this since time immemorial, the tendency is to take a little longer. Mm-hmm. Right? But, as Kapila Muni said, you follow the system in one lifetime. Or he says, in this life you can see him. So, that because the natural position of the living entity is so much stronger than this acquired identity. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So, all it is that we learn about it, we try to apply it, and then how much success we get, great. You know, because the point is it builds. It's not like the mundane that until you get 100%, then only you get benefit. Here we get benefit from even 1%. So that 1% then will give rise to the 2%. You know, does that make sense? And then you end up with, I guess it moves like Fibonacci. You know? Yeah, so then 1 plus 1 is 2, and 2 plus 1 is 3, and 3 plus 2 is 5, 5 plus 3 is 8, so it goes up quickly. And it's a natural form. Because what you're doing is just, I do this, I add, it's what I've done plus what was before. Right? So that's how it develops.
Like some devotees, they claim that we connect their work to devotional service. Like the, for example, they are doing like net sales, network sales. You know, they said we can make a lot of money. Then we use this money to serve Krishna.
Yeah. So then you see when they serve Krishna with the money, then it works.
Most of the cases, yes, many devotees they are cheated and they lost money.
Yeah, so then it becomes devotional service when it happens.
Only when it happens.
Means if the intent is there to use it for Krishna sincerely, then that part is good. But when it's not, that's the difficulty with indirect. Indirect, then you have to be conscious of it to make it actually connect to Krishna. You're chanting your rounds. Whether you're remembering Krishna or not, you're still associating directly with Krishna.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
But now you're, you know, what do you call it?
Net sales.
Net sales. You're doing net sales, but net sales then only becomes devotional service when it's actually connected. It's not on its own inherently devotional. Otherwise, if it was inherently devotional, there'd be a lot of the people on the planet absorbed in devotional service. You understand? So that's the weakness of the indirect. It can be connected. But you actually have to connect it. You can't just say I'm connected.
It means you have to give the fruit. But I have the fruit.
Yeah. The whole point is when you get the fruit, that you're making the endeavor, so for making the endeavor you're getting the benefit, but it's not until you get the result using Krishna's service that you get the full benefit. Right? So that's if your intent is good, then there's progress to the whole thing. But if it's only you're just saying this, then where's the benefit at all? Because saying, you can say so many things. But the point is it's the intent that makes it real or not. You know what I'm saying? And of course, it's like this. They shouldn't say you can make money by doing net sales. They can say one can make money by net sales, because unless they make money. See, it's like this, a guy who's doing net sales and is good at it and then does that for Krishna, then that's better. Right? Because he already knows it. Someone who doesn't know that and they just see, oh, you can make so much money here, then the problem is someone can make money, but whether they make money, that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? So that Prabhupada said, money is just flying in the air, you have to know how to reach up and grab it. So yes, there are unlimited schemes to make money, but unless you know these schemes and have proven yourself, then what's the point? So therefore, no one should invest money in someone who hasn't done any of this before. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, but even though they're doing it for Krishna, you know, do it for Krishna with their own money. Because it's like this, if they really are have the skill, then you start with something small and you build it up. I said, no, but we have to have 10,000, you know, in capital, like that. There are other schemes that you can get to 10,000. So start with your, you know, 100, and then build it up to 10,000, then start on your bigger scheme. Right? In other words, how does the businessman start? He starts out with 100,000? No, he starts out with 100. And he turns the 100 into 100,000. So it's a matter of doing it for Krishna means the intent actually is there. And it should be your duty. You know what I'm saying? You have that ability. Why get involved in something that's not your ability? Because then you lose money. How is that service to Krishna? You tried, yes, but should you have been doing that? You know what I'm saying? He's a guy who always does net sales. That's what he does. He's always successful. Then he goes to do it for Krishna and it doesn't work. That's another thing. But the person who's never done net sales in their life and says, oh, hey, we can make so much money, it's just, you know, yeah.
So connect means that the work is your duty and the work also can give results.
Yeah, it's just like this. The toaster is connected, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you have a toaster, you know how to use a toaster, you have ingredients for the toaster, you have a plug, you've paid your electric bill, you plug it in, the toaster actually works. You know?
Yeah.
But to have theories, oh, we can make so much, why making money for Krishna is important? Making devotees is more important. You know, chanting your rounds is also quite important. You know, taking prasad, associating with devotees, all these things are important, so why only making money is the thing that everybody, oh. You understand? You know, why don't they come up with a scheme to make tons of devotees? No, they only come up with schemes to make tons of money.
Because they think money is the most important, the important thing, at least to, I mean, to
so
service.
So the point is, okay, let's take like this. Does the Chinese government have money?
Yes.
Okay, are they devotees?
No.
So then it's not about the money. Otherwise, if it was by having money that will make you a devotee, then we would see, you know, all these big rich people would be, you know, they start off gross materialists and scamming and this and that, and as they get up and get more and more money, they become more gentle and all that, become into devotees, and then, you know, as they start, you know, the billionaires would all be pure devotees, you know, like that.
And we wouldn't be sitting here.
Huh?
And us, we wouldn't be sitting here.
Why not?
I mean, if you make money and that's how you become a devotee.
Yeah, we wouldn't be sitting here, then there's no need to listen to this class, you know. Yeah, definitely we wouldn't do that. So in other words, you already tried the other one, it didn't work, so you have to try this one. Okay. Okay, see? So. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Facility doesn't generate Krishna consciousness. This goes back to the previous. This is all one problem. You're thinking that karma generates bhakti. And the actual performer of karma is the living entity. You understand? So whether you apply that onto the side of fruit of activities or intellectual activity, it's still the same principle. Is the jiva is not the cause of anything, and no activity he can perform is the cause of anything. The Lord is the cause of everything. He's the cause, and everything else is the effect. Right? Now, we can take part in his the material arrangement according to his laws and take part and get effect. We follow the laws, we get a good effect. We don't follow the laws, we get a bad effect. Or we can take part in his laws connected to him and get a transcendental effect. But the point is, the potency for anything to function is Krishna's, not ours. We're 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. Everything else is bigger than us. Your friend here is bigger than us. Your friend, that means, now, 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair, how does that compare to your friend? You know, it could be billions of times bigger than you. Right? So, what's our actual effect? So therefore, it's because we work in cooperation with Krishna's energy, we're getting effect. So whether we're knowingly appreciating his supremacy or not, we follow his laws, then we get a better effect. We don't follow his laws, we get a worse effect. You understand? So this one formula, if you catch that, that will resolve probably most of your doubts. You understand? Yeah. That's what we're saying. The philosophy is very simple. It's very straightforward. Right? But it has manifold ways you can apply it. So that's why the doubts always come in. It's the same root with different applications. So you correct that root and connect that to Krishna. Then you see all these other applications also become connected to Krishna. Instead of becoming a source of doubt, they're a source of inspiration. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Maharaj's Sankhya philosophy is especially—it's very good to deal with doubt.
Yes. Because that's what it comes up. Is doubt is caused by material consciousness. So Shankya is to remove all doubt. Because doubt means you don't know what something is, or what it can do, or what, you know, or how to do it with that, you know, what is the combination. But Shankya exactly explains what is the field, how it works, what results you can get. So then there is no doubt.
No projection, no illusion.
No, yeah, no, it removes all that. So you know exactly what you're doing, because you can decide to be in illusion because you want to be, but with this knowledge, then you won't be. Because this is the knowledge by which you overcome illusion. So then you know who you are, material energy in the Lord, and you know the relationship. So now you know what is actual activity and actual result. Because I engage the body does an activity, it gets a result, that's not actually a result for me. Dead matter does something and creates, makes a transformation of dead matter. What has it got to do with me? You know what I'm saying? I take a brick and I turn it on the end. It's not that it's improved, or I turn it on the other end, or I turn it around, or I turn it on the other end, turn it back, or put it on the side. It's still dead matter. It still doesn't have any connection with it. Does that make sense? So however I manipulate the material energy, it still does nothing for the soul. Right? We just get bound in the idea, I will become happy by this manipulation. But if we see that I can't, because it's the Lord's energy, and the manipulation is being done by the modes of nature under the Lord's direction, for His sanction. So I can take part in that manipulation and do that for Krishna. That will then, the same effort and the same attachments and everything, the same field will take me out of the material world. But if I don't see it in connection with the Lord, it will take me deeper and deeper into the material world. You know, or I basically end up becoming a brick. Right. So.
Maharaj, I can see that sometimes we put too much effort in other activities rather than preaching. And Srila Prabhupada...
No, but how do you define preaching? You have to be very careful when you... theirs, because Sankirtan means the preaching mission and everything connected to it. Mm. You know, Bhakta Jose... every day he gets in the little van, goes down to the store, and brings ingredients for the temple. right? He may never talk to anybody, may not explain the philosophy to everybody, but he's involved in the preaching because he's getting ingredients that others are there for using. Right? Somebody's fixing the lights in the temple, someone's cooking prasad, someone's worshiping the deity, and then people are coming, taking prasad, seeing the deities, meeting the devotees.
Part of the team.
He's part of the team. So that's why when you say there's a lot of activities that are not preaching, you have to be careful like that. More, it's not so much the activities, it's the attitude of performing the activities. That's what's not important. Right? If Bhakta Jose thinks that nothing goes on in the temple without him, that's a problem. But if he thinks I'm just a servant of the servant here, then that's great service. Right? You know, but if he thinks that I don't buy the potatoes and everything stops because he's the supreme controller of everything, then that's a problem. Does that make sense? Okay, that is verse 6. In his Paramatma Sandarbha, Anucheda 29, Srila Jiva Goswami cites text 6 to describe how a soul's rebellious independence from Krishna causes his illusion. Srila Jiva explains that when an individual soul's blissful spiritual consciousness is reflected as a perversion in material consciousness, he thinks, I will not act for your benefit, I will act only for my benefit. In this way, the soul necessarily becomes under the grip of the materialistic false ego and enters the material world. Because he comes under the grip of the false ego because he's not acting in connection with Krishna, which is his nature. Right? Because if we're an energy of Krishna, we're not separate from Krishna, just like the energy and the generator. The electricity and the generator aren't separate. But if the electricity thinks I'll function separately than the generator, it doesn't function. Right? But because that's a material energy, it'll transform into something else. But the jiva will always remain. But it becomes inactive, ineffective. Nothing gets done. So it says necessarily comes under the grip of the materialistic false ego. And as soon as you have the materialistic false ego, then you enter the material world, because that's the only place where it can function. Right? Real identity functions in the spiritual world, false identity functions in the material world. In this way, footnote 16. How could this happen and why? Srila Prabhupada addresses this question in his purport to Bhagavad Gita 13:20. Actually, the living entity is originally the spiritual part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. But due to his rebellious nature, he is conditioned within material nature. It really does not matter how these living entities or superior entities of the Supreme Lord have come in contact with material energy. Right? So it doesn't matter. The principles that are given, what you have to follow here, is all one requires. So it's not that, only when we understand how we fell here, then we can actually get somewhere. That doesn't matter. It's just like you're out in the water, somebody throws you a rope from a boat and says, grab the rope, we'll pull you out. You don't sit there and say, well, how did I get here? No, grab the rope. No, but until I know how I got here, then how will grabbing the rope help me? Right? So it doesn't matter. And then when you follow the process, you find that the process is the same. How you got here is the opposite of how you get out of here. Right? You get out of the water, that's how you, that's normal. You fall into the water, that's the end of it. So that's all. So it's just reversing what's there. So since we don't understand the spiritual world, follow the process that's given, you'll get to the spiritual platform, then it's all very clear. Right? The Supreme Personality of Godhead knows, however, how and why this actually took place. So he knows. But, point is we don't know, so the whole thing is, how's it going to benefit us by trying to know something that we're not really going to be able to understand? So the Lord knows, so if he reveals it, then we know. But the point is it doesn't matter to get out. That all we have to know is that we became rebellious. That's all we... So we give up that, rebellious nature, everything goes back to normal. Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 6 relates the allusion to the example of a man haunted by a ghost and describes the need for change of consciousness from material to spiritual. The forgetful living entity can be compared to a man who is under the influence of disease and has become mad, or to a man haunted by ghosts, who acts without control and yet thinks himself to be in control. Under the influence of material nature, the conditioned soul becomes absorbed in material consciousness. In this consciousness, whatever is done under the influence of the material energy is accepted by the conditioned soul as self-actuated. We think that I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. Right? But in actuality, it's just carried out by the modes of nature. But you think I'm doing this. Right? You know, it's just like the drunk man thinks he's sitting in a chair and finds himself on the ground. Right? You know, so that's the whole thing, is you think you're doing things when you're actually not. The illusion keeps you.
But it's always very nice to blame someone else.
Yes, of course. It makes it so much easier. So whoever put me here, it's their business to get me out of here. And in the meantime, I'm just going to do my best to enjoy myself. Right.
As a scientific basis.
Yes, as a scientific basis, yeah. Actually, the soul in his pure state of existence should be in Krishna consciousness. When a person is not acting in Krishna consciousness, he is understood to be acting in material consciousness. Because there's one or the other. Because
yes.
Material consciousness simply means lack of Krishna consciousness, just like dark simply means lack of light. So it's not that there's two consciousnesses. No, there's one and then lack of it. So basically, you can say one is consciousness, one is lack of consciousness. Right? Consciousness cannot be killed, for the symptom of the living entity is consciousness. The material consciousness simply has to be purified. One becomes liberated by accepting Krishna, or the Supreme Lord, as master, and by changing the mode of consciousness from material to Krishna, material consciousness to Krishna consciousness. So that's the whole thing that we're trying to do. Now, one's utilizing, of course, the material energy, so the same attachment that gets you in can get you out. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So let's say somebody likes to wear karmic clothes. So then find situations to where wearing karmic clothes, you can engage it in Krishna's service. Some preaching, some this and some that. That will purify you. But this purification will mean it'll bring you to the point where you're not attached to wearing karmic clothes. Right? Does that make sense? So Krishna, so expertly, whatever your attachment is, you engage it according to the proper rules and mentality in Krishna's service, it will remove that attachment at the same time as you've advanced in Krishna consciousness. Right? That's the whole point. That advancement in Krishna consciousness means knowledge and detachment come automatically. So you find, I'm advancing in Krishna consciousness, therefore I'm detached from what it was before that was keeping me bound up in the material world. Does that make sense? So one's attached to money, therefore do business, do whatever it is, get money in Krishna conscious ways and use it in Krishna conscious ways. It will be purified. Does that make sense? You like to eat Krishna prasad. Whatever it is, you connect it to Krishna, you get purified. Right? And the more that surrender is, the quicker it is. And the less there is, and the slower it is. Kapila Dev continues. Material consciousness is the cause of one's conditional life. There's your see, the material consciousness, not me. In which conditions are enforced upon the living entity by the material energy, right? See, we're the victim, we're being forced upon us, right? Yes. Although the spirit soul does not do anything and is transcendental to all such activities, he is thus affected by conditional life. So he's not actually doing anything. And technically he's unaffected. But because he identifies with it, he's affected by the conditioned life. So it affects his consciousness. But actually, technically, it does nothing for the soul, because how can two things? Does that make sense? They're not connected to each other. Does that make sense?
This is the problem, identification.
Identification. Is that false? Because false ego means false identification. Real ego means real identification. So it's not that it changes. I'm not this body means I don't deal with the body properly. I'm not this body, so therefore now I'm not identifying, I can use it properly. The tendency is if I'm not this body, I mean if I think I'm the body, but I say I'm not this body, I tend to use the body however I want it, right? Because if I am this body, I should do these rules. If I'm not this body, I don't have to follow any rules. Right? But the actual point is if I'm not this body, then I can very comfortably follow the rules of this body. Right? Well, before I was uncomfortable following because if I am this body, I'd like to do other things, so I'd like this body to do other things. But if I'm not this body, then I'm quite satisfied just doing the things that this body does. Yes.
But can you say that what connects the soul and the body and everything is our either false ego?
Yes, the false identification. Because the point is the soul is no more or less connected with the body if he's in transcendental consciousness or material consciousness, because the soul and the body don't have any connection. Right? But we become affected by the material consciousness. So as soon as we purify that consciousness to where Krishna conscious, then we're unaffected. Then we're in our natural position. But we perform our duties connected with the body. That's why the importance of perform your duties. Because then when we do become transcendental, well, then we still perform our duties. Otherwise the idea is, no, when I'm transcendental, I don't have to follow any duties. Where does that come from? So it's still, again, that rebellious nature, I don't follow any rules. So now I just blame it on Krishna consciousness instead of on mine. In any case, I'm rebellious. Right? So that's the difficulty. The cause of the conditioned soul's material body and senses, and the senses presiding deities, the demigods, is the material nature. So material nature carries out all this. This is understood by learned men. Because we think, no, I'm the cause, right? Because that comes back to what we were talking about. We're the cause of everything, but when we understand we're not the cause, right? We just choose where we want to be entangled. You know, you have a big spider web. So you can decide which part of the spider web you want to be tied up in. You know? But it's not that we created the spider web. The feelings of happiness and distress of the soul who is transcendental by nature are caused by the spirit soul himself. It's not caused by the body. It's caused by the spirit soul himself. Because they think, if this happens with the body and senses, I'll be happy. So when it happens, then this spirit soul is happy. And when it doesn't happen, then the spirit soul is sad. This is the fun part. We create our happiness and distress, but we say it's not the body, the other living entities, the demigods, and all this, because we say, if this happens with the situation of the demigods, the sun comes out today, I'll be happy. If it's cloudy, I'll be sad. You know, if this person interacts with me, I'll be happy. If they don't, I'll be sad.
The modes of nature.
Well, that it's all controlled by the modes. But the point is still, the soul technically is not controlled by the modes. They allow themselves to come under the influence. Right? I mean, in other words, the influence the modes are doing, and as the modes do things that we say will make us happy in distress, we become happy in distress. But the modes of nature technically don't make us distressed. We make ourselves distressed. That's...
Yes. The only thing I really find hard to understand, we always say that the soul is dormant here.
Soul is dormant.
Yeah, that's what Prabhupada said. It's sleeping while we are conditioned and performing here.
Yeah, but sleeping means he's asleep to his actual position.
Oh, that's okay.
It's just like you're sleeping, you're having a dream, you're active. But it's just not very beneficial. You know what I'm saying? All that money you made in the dream, when you wake up, it's not there. Now, that would be great. You made in the dream, you made huge amounts of money, but when you wake up, there's this huge pile of money on your head. You know? That wouldn't be bad. Yeah, but it's not. So that's why it's asleep. So we're asleep to our actual condition. It's not that he's asleep snoring away. Because the point is that if we were snoring away, why are we disturbed by it? Okay. Because in the dream, when you fall out the window, you're not happy. You know, unless falling out the window means you're flying, then that's okay. Yes.
So I ask this question of happiness and distress. It's mainly a projection of the mind.
It's a projection of the soul through the material mind.
Yes.
Like that, because you have to experience. So it's either you're using the spiritual mind or using the material. Right, because the living entity has mind, he's conscious, so everything's there. Everything, our spiritual situation is covered. You know what I'm saying? So therefore the mind, all that's not a separate entity to the living entity in the spiritual world. Here it is. Because if you're not using the real thing, then you're covered by something that's not. Is that so?
And so the identification of the mind is quite strong.
Yes. Because we think, therefore we are. But actually it's we are, therefore we think. Okay, footnote 7 and 8, footnote 17. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 13:21-22. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyment in the world. Right? So the cause and effects is the material. But all the situations you're in, that's created by the material energy. But various sufferings and enjoyments, that is created by us.
Yes.
The living entity in material nature thus follows the way of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. So he associatively creates the situations. And then we identify this as good or not good. Right? So that's the... The conditioned souls identify with this world as if it were their own. In illusion, they believe themselves the controllers of destiny, although their power is insignificant compared to the governing power of the material energy. But she is one quarter of the cosmic manifestation. And we're 1/10,000. I mean, she's one quarter of unlimited. And we're 1/10,000, the tip of the hair. You know, yeah, eternally. You know, it's just, you know, that's our size. You know what I'm saying? So there's a, and that's one tip of the hair here. You know, not that when we're in Vasudeva Sattva we're bigger or something. You know, well, that's Mahavishnu, and so his hair, so we're bigger. No, we're still the same size. Right. Yeah, so therefore we can't become proud, right? Although their power, they believe themselves the controllers of destiny, in illusion, right? Although their power is insignificant compared to the governing power of the material energy. By Maya's influence, their actions then invariably stem from a desire to act selfishly. That means with, separate from Krishna. The attempt to enjoy separately from Krishna forces them to assume responsibility for their own happiness and distress, along with the reactions of their deeds. So, not only do you get the happiness and distress, you get the reaction of the deed. You know what I'm saying? Because the happiness and stress is just a perception, but you also get also the situation generated from your desire. Right? You know, so that's insult to injury here. Right? You're already suffering, and then the safe drops out the 10th floor and falls on your head. Right? No? So you assume responsibility because you're saying I'm separate. So if you're separate, you're responsible. We're on to Krishna, then we're not responsible. Because we do everything for Krishna. But the living entity can choose to, again, act in Krishna's service, as Srila Prabhupada explains in purport to verse 8. The living entity is the cause of his own suffering, but it can also be the cause of his eternal happiness. When he wants to engage in Krishna consciousness, a suitable body is offered to him by the internal potency, the spiritual energy of the Lord. And when he wants to satisfy his senses, the material body is offered. Thus, it is his free choice to accept the spiritual body or a material body. But once the body is accepted, he has to enjoy or suffer the consequences. So you accept one or the other, you have to remain until that. So the next time we can make means change the situation is at the end of this body, because this body lasts X amount of time and we're going to be in it for that amount of time. It doesn't matter. Right? And so when that's over, then we can shift, and then if you prefer a spiritual body, we can shift that. But the point is to do that, we have to start practicing that now. And the fun part is we can even actually be functioning in a spiritual body while we're still in the material body. But that's the way it works. Because you perform an action, the reaction comes. So you have to live with it. It depends on us. Srila Prabhupada concludes, in summary, the suffering of the conditioned soul is due to its attachment to material nature. This attachment should be thus transferred from matter to Krishna. So we're suffering because we're attached to matter. We transfer that same attachment to Krishna. We get out of the material world. We stop suffering. That's how we're supposed to do. Does that make sense? So the process is very simple. So what is the material energy? What is the jiva? What's Krishna? And how to do this? That's what the Shankhya explains. That's all. Because we think, okay, I'm this body. Then it points out what the body's actually and who's actually in control of it. I'm this house, what the house is made out of. I'm this money, you know, and what actually that's made out of. Is that something? Okay, so stop here.